Hello and welcome to the Just Interesting podcast, the show that is not boring, it's not too interesting. Well, actually, I'll stop right there because it's 10:05, so this show, I imagine, will be slightly less interesting than normal because I'm going to fall asleep. It is way past my bedtime.
You're hosting, Alex. This is a bad
Well,
move.
I mean, I'll tell you right now, skip this podcast. Actually, don't. I can't tell you to skip this podcast because this podcast is brought to you by NordVPN. Well, I guess I wasn't going to jump into it right then and there, but let's. So NordVPN has kindly offered to sponsor this podcast, and they are offering you 68% off a 2-year plan, which is just a fantastic deal that equals around $3.70 per month.
Did you say 68%?
68% off a 2-year plan.
That is the biggest discount I've ever heard.
Do you know what? When you said that, I thought I'd made a huge mistake because that sounded like a ridiculous amount to me too. But no, Robin, you're not taking crazy pills. It's 68% off a 2-year plan.
68% off a 2-year plan. That's amazing.
That is very good. But what happens, Alex, if I think, actually, although 68% is a good deal, the service isn't quite for me for whatever reason.
Yeah. Well, I mean, since we've done that little bit, this is the third time we've done that. I think you know what happens. You get a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no pressure. If you don't like it, just say that you don't like it, and you get your money back. But you're going to love it because it's NordVPN. And let's be honest here, NordVPN is kind of the head honcho when it comes to VPN services. It's the one that we use.
The Don.
And it's the Don of VPN services.
They're good at what they do. They offer the security and they offer the very useful workarounds, geo-blocks, whether it's some kind of streaming platform or some kind of news article or something else. I don't want to assume or even ponder about things that our listeners get up to. I mean, they're very interested people, interested in all kinds of things. And it's great. Like you say, it's a useful tool that I imagine millions of people in over 60 countries, that's where all their servers are located, in over 60 countries. So you could be anywhere in the world on the internet, but actually just in the comfort of your own home.
Exactly. And this week I watched a program that's on ITV Player, which is UK based, called Dez, about Dennis Nilsen, the infamous serial killer. So if you're American and you love serial killers, then NordVPN will allow you to watch that, and it is good. It's very good.
That's a great recommendation. Yeah. You can also download it for your phone on iOS and Android so that your mobile browsing experience is kept secure. So, if you're going to a cafe and you're, putting in passwords like MAGA2020! that a hacker sitting at a table nearby is not going to hack into your Twitter account. And that wasn't targeted at anyone, by the way. That was just spontaneous.
Just random off the top of your head, yeah.
Random. Yeah, I genuinely think in 2020, everyone should be using this. I have it on my computer, and I think that it's super invaluable. I couldn't live without it.
Yes, the proof is in the pudding, and this pudding is us three using it.
Yeah, that's true. Exactly. And what's the best way to get this deal then, Alex?
Well, let me tell you, Robin, you need to go to nordvpn.com/justinteresting. That's nordvpn.com/justinteresting. And if you don't know how that's spelled, just look at the title of this podcast wherever you're listening to us. So follow that link to get 68% off a 2-year plan plus a 30-day money back guarantee, so there's literally no risk and you're supporting our podcast. Or use the code justinteresting at checkout. And with that all said and done, I suppose I should introduce both of you now, shouldn't I?
You could do, you don't have to.
Robin, how are you?
I am well, thank you, Alex. I'm doing all right. Feeling a little bit tired. I think as the seasons change, you get those sleepless nights. But otherwise, fine. Doing well. How about you?
Yeah, not too bad. I totally get what you mean. When do the clocks go back? Is that this week?
This weekend. Mm-hmm.
This weekend. Now it's going to really feel like it's winter then, won't it?
Oh, big time. Big time.
Yeah,
oh,
absolutely.
Oh. I'm good. How about you, Martin?
Had a decent week. I'm enjoying this. I'm enjoying this Halloween season, isn't it? I'm not a massive Halloween fan, but I do like the kind of the autumn weather coming in and the nights getting shorter for certain things. I like watching a movie, watching a spooky movie. I watched The Corpse Bride recently, a couple of nights ago.
That's good. I like that.
Yeah, no, it's good fun. Yeah. Good fun, and I think appropriate for this time of year. So
I love this. I think I agree with you, Martin. Screw Christmas. I think this is my favourite part of the year.
Do you have any good horror movie recommendations for our listeners?
Well, actually, one horror film that I would recommend to, particularly to people who are nervous about horror films, who think they don't like the big gore stuff, there's a 1957, I think, film.
You've lost me.
So yes, it is black and white, I warn you, and it stars Dana Andrews, who's a very popular American star at the time. People may know him from the Twilight Zone. He was in that, and he plays this skeptic, this scientific skeptic, who's traveling to Britain for a conference on the supernatural, and he's the guest speaker, and he's going to debunk ghosts. And this film is called Night of the Demon in the UK, or Curse of the Demon in the US. And it's only 90 minutes long, but it's a really, really taut, suspenseful thriller, because he thinks ghosts aren't real, but then something starts chasing him, pursuing him. And it's just really good. It's really good done. It's got some hokey moments in, because, you know, it's from the 50s, but I think it's a really, really good film. It's called Night of the Demon. Night of the Demon. And it's famous for a couple of things. It's famous because the director constructed the film around the fact that you wouldn't see anything supernatural happening. It was all suggested. But then the producers, without the director's permission, went and shot a load of footage, which kind of looks pretty crap with today's special effects, of supernatural beings. And the director never intended for that to be there. But it's in the film. So it's interesting to see how the film would have been without that stuff. But it's also interesting because Kate Bush in Hounds of Love, I think, her song Hounds of Love samples a line of dialogue from this film at the beginning of that song. So, yeah.
I have to cross-reference that after this onto the podcast.
Once again, Robin, your knowledge of films just astounds me. How do you know that bit of trivia? You've got like the whole of IMDb downloaded into your brain.
I really don't. I really wish I did. Yeah.
And I can only apologise, Martin, because there is a film question in the quiz this week.
I'm 1-0 down already.
No,
which we will be doing at the end of this podcast.
It's actually one of Martin's home movies. It's a question about Martin's personal collection.
Yeah. But before that, though, we're going to be talking about what we've learned this week. And we are going to be talking about a news story that I think Robin showed us. And it's about this group of hackers, or like a new group of Robin Hood hackers. They're stealing from the rich corporations and giving to charities. Over $10,000 to charities that were fraudulently stolen from big corporations. And we're going to get into that, decide what we think of it.
That is a thorny, controversial topic.
Yeah. I mean, is that kind of stealing inception, is it? Steelception. They've stolen it from big corporations who've, you know, through various means, stolen it from elsewhere.
That's good. Save it for later, though. But in the meantime, what have you learned this week, Robin?
Well, I had a bit of a nerdy week, actually, and I found out some interesting things about data degradation.
It is interesting.
Yeah, so a lot of people might assume that digital copies of things are pretty solid, pretty safe, pretty secure. Who needs paper? In fact, we're striving for a paperless world, aren't we? But bit rot is a thing, and data does decay, and so nothing is safe, whether it's on a CD, USB, hard drive. It's not safe. But I was just fascinated to learn that the thing that causes data degradation, the major cause, is high energy, or specifically cosmic rays. I think that's amazing. Just, I love the phrase cosmic rays. I'm like, it's a comic book. It's not a real thing, but no, it is a real thing, and it can cause your digital files to degrade. And the thing that I found particularly interesting was that, because, you know, all data is based on binary code 0101. What high energy cosmic rays do to cause data decay is they flip one of those bits of information. They just flip it from 1 to 0 or 0 to 1. And all it takes is for one number to flip in a digital file and it becomes corrupt.
How does a 1 change to a 0? Like, digitally, how? I don't. At that point, in
cosmic
like
rays, Alex.
Cosmic rays. How does a cosmic ray change a 1 to a 0?
Because cosmic that's almost, rays, Alex. What? Cosmic rays.
Because I get like it's not. I mean, it's actively changing a number to another number. I get that it's like a switch, so there's like one or the other,
yeah.
But
yeah, but yeah, no, it just so confuses weird. The computers and tells it to do that. Yeah. It's yeah.
That's weird. That just makes no sense to me. Is there a way to protect data from cosmic rays?
They're working on it. Because it's
can
important.
NordVPN protect you from cosmic rays?
Well, why not subscribe and find out? 60% off.
That wasn't on their talking points.
Well, I learned about something called Soku Shinbutsu. Have you heard of this?
Sounds Japanese.
Yes, it is Japanese. Well, this word is Japanese, but the process is conducted amongst Buddhist monks. Well, most of them a few thousand years ago, but it's basically the process of where Buddhist monks aim to mummify themselves whilst they're still alive.
Oh,
that should never be anyone's aim.
Well, yeah, this is what I was thinking. But anyway, this is it involves having a really strict diet consisting of pine needles, resins, and seeds, which are found up in the mountains, which then get rid of basically all the body fat on someone's body. So basically, it's extreme starvation, basically. And stop their liquid intake to dehydrate the body and shrink all the organs, and then die in this state of meditation when their body's literally being mummified. Most of these took place in the Edo period, which was between 1603 and 1868 in Japanese history. There's this particular process that Buddhist monks in particular did as this tantric practice to try and to show their devotion to the Buddhist religion, which is quite amazing. And it's still done today by some like crazy Buddhists. There was a Thai Buddhist called Luang Pho Dieng. Not sure if I got that right, but I think it's about right. But apparently it's really, really hard to do, to actually kill yourself by doing this. And only 24 actual mummifications where people have died of this have been discovered to date.
I mean, yeah, just like the sheer determination that would be required to not give up.
Yeah, exactly, when your body's literally being dehydrated and mummified.
I mean, it's horrifying. Like, I can't... That must be absolute torture for the people going through it. But it seems kind of self-inflicted. Why...
Yeah, I think the idea is that they almost become a Buddha in their own body. You know, they've reached this state of enlightenment by doing this. I guess it's kind of similar, like an extreme version of kind of fasting for your religion, isn't it? It's showing that dedication and that spirituality by doing it.
Yeah, I mean, I do admire that aspiration to ultimate self-discipline that the most extreme forms of Buddhism take. I suppose there's something admirable in that, but yeah,
at base level it's
your
stupid.
Life's purpose being to die, but albeit die in a particular way.
I think it's done as like it's almost like a sacrificial act, isn't it? It seems to be related to kind of trying to find some kind of solace or salvation for all the wrong deeds that man has done. And so it's almost that kind of, they're acting almost as that Jesus figure, but a different religion, you know, sacrificing themselves for their religion.
I feel like whatever the reason, you know, it's essentially suicide, isn't it? And that's kind of, a lot of different religions and cults have justified that in their own way over the years. But is it not kind of the same? Like you're sacrificing yourself, you know, by showing how devoted and faithful you are.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, with the process taking between like 3 and 10 years on average, 1,000 to 3,000 days, it's not exactly a slow process in terms of this. So it's certainly not a quick and easy death.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
That is interesting. What was it called, Martin?
Are you going to make me say it again?
Yeah. I am, yeah.
Soku Shinbutsu.
Interesting.
Ah.
Cool.
Soku Shinbutsu.
So what I learned this week was, I mean, I feel bad because I haven't actually watched it, but I've heard someone told me about this documentary called Into Eternity. Mm. And the synopsis of it is what really fascinated me, because it's something that I've never thought about before. But basically, nuclear waste is something that we have to store it somewhere, because that radioactive waste is dangerous to humans for thousands of years. So we have to store it in safe places that can stand the test of time, and this radioactive waste isn't going to leak anywhere, and it's not going to, you know, it's susceptible to natural disasters, man-made disasters like has happened in the past.
Yeah, I mean, we could just not produce it in the first place, but, you know.
That would be a simple solution, but that's not an option, Mark.
Okay.
We could do. So this is about people, like, how do we make something that is going to be last for thousands of years, and goes into the kind of moral implications of creating this waste in the first place, given that society in 1,000 years' time could look totally different. We could be some advanced aliens, or we could have reverted to cavemen and sticks and stones.
So this is kind of like, how do we best let people know that this radioactive waste is still there?
Exactly, yeah. So
because if you think back 1,000 years, I mean, at a basic level, we could degenerate. Our society could fall apart. It seems quite likely at the moment. Mm. But our methods of communication are way more advanced. If we look back 1,000 years and we say, okay, if there was some radioactive waste that they buried 1,000 years ago, would they be able to let us know now? Mm. And the obvious answer would be no, because of the communication methods. Like, we don't, yeah, there aren't records.
Has changed, yeah.
But I mean, as you say, even digital records degrade over time, Robin. So, but it would take those, that communication. I mean, we're in such a better position to be able to tell future generations about what's going on, surely,
yeah,
than we were 1,000 years ago. Will we be responsible enough to do so? It's another question.
But also, all the storage so far is like interim storage. It's not designed for this length of time. So, so they're making in Finland the world's first permanent repository for this radioactive waste.
Oh, I bet the locals are loving that.
it's being mined out of like solid rock, and they're creating a huge system of tunnels. And it's got to last the entire period the waste remains hazardous, which is up to 100,000 years. Wow. And then once it's full up, it will be sealed off and never opened again. Yeah, I mean, just think about like archaeologists when they discovered Tutankhamun's tomb, or when they discover like, like massive temples that say this place is cursed. What's the first thing humans do? we break into it. So you put some like universal sign of danger up, like some skulls or the color red or something.
which again
would be difficult because red would, even the color would erase over time.
I guess as language develops as well, people might not necessarily understand.
So what do you genuinely, how do you tell people 100,000 years from now, whatever that is, that what they've discovered isn't mystical burial ground or hidden treasure, but is just radioactive waste?
I mean, to start, I think we'd be lucky to make it 100,000 years. But on a practical note, it's a good point. You know, that communication gets lost. Other things around it will degrade, won't they? Even if the radioactive waste doesn't, so the landscape will look completely different. You'd imagine in 100,000 years' time, whether that's Finland suddenly getting involved in a massive war or whatever. You never know over long periods of time. So the answer is, we have a responsibility to ensure that in our lifetimes it's communicated, that the next generation has to effectively communicate that to the generations after that. But as I come back to my initial point, don't create loads of radioactive waste that you then have to bury in Finland.
And the other option is that they somehow like fire it into space, but I don't think that's an option, because in case there's an accident and it gets released into the atmosphere,
I watched that Challenger documentary, which was amazing, by the way. If anyone hasn't seen that, it's a great, it's really quite good. Don't do that.
But yeah, I just thought that was like something that I've never thought about before, but it's an interesting challenge. How would you tell future generations and your descendants to keep out of a radioactive waste that can't be touched for 100,000 years? Interesting.
Do you know what that?
I thought anyway.
Do you know what that documentary is called?
It's called Into Eternity.
Into Eternity.
I might have to give it a watch.
And, yeah, I'm adding that to the list. Absolutely. Yeah,
I'm hoping it's not rubbish. I've had it recommended to me though by Justin. We remember Justin. He appeared on one of our old podcasts one time.
He did, and
his name is a component part of our name. So yeah,
exactly. Well, that's very true.
Great. Well, thank you for sharing with me what you've both learned this week. Shall we look at some of our favorite comments from the week?
Yes.
So I've got a comment from Kat Hales. Hello, Kat.
Oh, Kat. Hello. Yeah.
Who's commenting on, we asked the question last week, if you had to live in a fantasy world, what one would you live in?
Yes.
And we suggested Lord of the Rings, and Kat points out, in the Shire, you get second breakfast as standard. And that didn't actually... We didn't mention
the food at all, did we?
That is a good point. And to be honest, that's a winning argument. So yeah. I think I said... I might have said the Elder Scrolls. So I might change my answer to the Shire.
I think we all agreed in the
Shire
end.
Would be good. Yeah. Would be good. Yeah. Before the Saruman comes and burns it down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Forget that.
Yeah. First breakfast, second breakfast, 11Zs. Lunch,
afternoon tea.
Dinner, supper. Yeah, lots of meals. I like that. That sounds good.
Yeah, that does sound good.
Well, I've got a message from Elaine Christina, and she says that she lives in a small town in the Brazilian countryside. Sounds lovely. And she says, believe it or not, but Freemasons are here too.
Oh.
And one of her close relatives is a member. She says that they mostly work with charity, but socializing aspect seems to have a clear goal, which seems to be business. So they seem to have do a lot of charity work, which is indeed remarkable. But on the other hand, she feels as though they work towards their own social and financial advantage, which I guess kind of goes along with like the fraternity aspect, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So she says that the secret is that they want a certain amount of power and members help each other out to achieve that. So that's interesting. Right. Interesting point there. That kind of a little bit of insight into the fact that within a community setting, yes, they do stuff for charity, but they're also kind of trying to help each other out for their own business and political
profile, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah.
I guess that sounds quite nefarious, but also like kind of makes sense if someone's in the same organization as you. It's like a network, isn't it?
It's networking. Networking of contacts. Very basic level is networking, and then I guess if you've been within the Freemasons for a while, these people then would become your friends, wouldn't they? You want to help out your friends too.
Well, my comment actually I found really hard to pick because there were loads of really good comments last week.
There were lots of really good ones this week.
I just want to mention that lots of kind, lovely listeners wished Martin a happy birthday.
Oh, yes, they did, and thank you so much. Welcome. That was very, very kind of you all. And if I tried to go through and give a heart to everyone who did, but if I missed anyone, I'm very sorry. But thank you very much.
And of course, we had lots, like Martin just read out, lots of people divulging information about Freemasons, and a couple of interesting comments from people like Ornate Fabrications Limited commented about Saab, the car manufacturer who came up in the quiz. But I decided to settle for a comment by Staffs Woodsman PAZA, who said, Robin's hidden talent is he secretly knows how to castrate perfectly. But then Joseph Stalsberg replied to that comment saying, maybe not perfectly, but just good enough. which I just thought was amazing.
I didn't even want to
contemplate what just good enough looks like.
This castration's not perfect. It's not terrible. It's just good enough.
It's better than watching Magnolia paint dry. I mean, if nothing else, Robin, you've at least got a few options. You know how to do it in different ways.
It's true. So. There's a tool. I know there's a tool I can find. This is how this all started, wasn't it? Way back when.
The castration tool.
I learned about that castration tool for sheep. It would work on humans, I'm sure. Yeah.
Are there any on eBay? How would you procure one of those? Because you said that you can find it. Sat next to you right now?
It's within arm's reach, isn't it? It's next to the shrine to Chris McCrate, just in the corner there.
So that's Sir Chris McCrate to you.
Great. Okay, great. Well, thank you. Keep your comments coming in. We absolutely love reading them every week. Yeah, please don't encourage Robin anymore with this whole castration bit. It's been 6 months. It's not funny.
It's been a while. Yeah. And I do apologize to the people who comment saying that they've had enough of the castration thing. I'll try not to mention it in future.
Good.
That's a guarantee. You're going to bring it up next week. Okay, cool. Well, shall we talk about the main topic of this week?
Oh, yes, please.
So the question that I wanted to ask this week, and it's in relation to one story in particular that you kindly shared with me, Robin, is are hackers actually the good guys in 2020, maybe? And it's relating to this one particular story where these mysterious Robin Hood hackers have been stealing from the rich and giving to charity in the form of Bitcoin donations, which of course are untraceable.
Yeah.
But this is a hacking group called DarkSide, which is quite a new one, apparently.
It's got an ominous name for someone claiming to be good.
Yeah. 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 No, trust us. We're good. We're good. What's your name? DarkSide.
What's your logo? It's a skull.
It's a skull. Are we the bad guys?
But despite their ominous name, they have stolen money from unknown companies, but they say they now want to make the world a better place, and they've donated this money to two charities, Children International, along with the Water Project. They donated the equivalent of $10,000 worth of Bitcoins to each of them. Now, both charities have come back and said that they won't be accepting the money. Do you think that's right? Do you think it's right that they shouldn't accept the money? If they know that it's stolen, right?
Yeah, you can't, as a charity, you can't accept stolen money, can you? It's not a great look for your PR. I mean, the question of whether these guys are the good guys or the bad guys is a tough one, because for starters, we don't really know who they've stolen from. So we're taking their word that they're stealing from rich, unscrupulous organizations, but we don't necessarily know. I think there have been a few names banded around about who they might have stolen from, with one of them being who are they called?
Travelex.
That's the one. Travelex. Which so you think about all these big companies and whether they pay their taxes. So are they literally just stealing the excess money that would be paid in, say, taxes and other duties that have been raised by these companies from their unscrupulous practices? And you think, is it necessarily a bad thing that they're giving this money to charity? I think most people would say, okay, the money that should have been paid in tax, if this is being given to charity, then that's a good thing. But you can't just take money away from people, can you? You can't do it in this way.
No. I mean, it's hard to disagree with the notion of giving $10,000 or $11,000 to a charity, and they've done this for two charities, and that's good. But what percentage of the money that they stole is that? You know,
because that's what we don't know. Yeah,
it's less meaningful.
How much of this is
if they stole $25,000 and gave $20,000 or $21,000 to charity, then you're like, okay, you know, you keep the $4,000 to yourself as a commission. That's all right. But if they stole $10 million, then I mean, that's nothing.
Well, that's the thing. This because they're thought to have been involved in the Travelex hack, which was earlier this year, I believe, or late last year, one or the other. And they hacked them and put out a ransom. So Travelex actually paid the ransom, which was $2.3 million. And so they're giving away $10,000 to two companies. Where's the other $2.28 million from this hack, right?
Yeah.
It's almost trying to legitimize the actions. The notion of taking away from these big companies, we don't necessarily know that Travelex were one of them, although they're assumed to be. And obviously various other companies. The notion of taking away from these big and scrupulous organizations and giving to the poor is something that a lot of people, I think, would agree with. But it's just the means of doing this via ransomware. It's just, it's not the way to go about it, unfortunately.
Good, It's also problematic in and of itself, because once you've established that this money has been stolen, that counts as stolen goods, and the law in America and in the UK, and I assume the rest of Europe, where these people are operating, or where these charities are based, the law says that it's illegal to receive stolen goods. So that's why I imagine that's one of the reasons the charities have returned the money or declined to accept it. It's not just because they feel uncomfortable accepting it, it's because legally they would be committing a crime to accept it. So how meaningful is it, again, to, even if you give away 100% of the money that you stole, if it's clear that you stole it, even from somebody who deserved it, so to speak, the charities can't accept it legally. So it's kind of meaningless, isn't it?
Yeah.
So almost like the only way to actually be the good guys is not to publicize it, but you feel like they want to publicize it because they want the good publicity. I can definitely see, you're right, that public sentiment, especially in 2020 when these corporations are, you know, getting bigger and bigger and kind of taking over smaller businesses, and putting people out of work. The idea of Robin Hood as a kind of, you know, hero stealing from the rich and giving to the poor, I don't think has ever looked more appealing, to be honest.
People are about to hit, and possibly already have hit, really hard times, and charities are going to be very important in the coming years, as they have been throughout human history, but particularly I think probably the last time charities were going to be this essential was 2008 to 2011, when the recession was at its worst. And they're about to be really essential again for society. But I agree. It's a nice idea, and absolutely, I can imagine public opinion being in favor of them, and in particular hackers as well, because hackers have a very bad image. At the risk of getting hacked, I'm going to say, not necessarily without good cause, that they have a bad image. Hackers aren't necessarily evil people. It's just that there are hackers who do bad things, and they're the ones who get the headlines. So it's understandable that they would want to do something that would get good headlines for hackers.
Absolutely. I think they're definitely in terms of where, you know, I sit on the political spectrum, as it were, I don't fundamentally disagree with what the, you know, that distribution of wealth, but of course it's the way that they've gone about it, and also the unintended consequences of this as well, because they've given away $20,000, around $20,000, to these couple of these charities. They've stolen $2.3 million, which is a lot of money, and the consequences of stealing that money from these companies is that the likelihood is that this won't necessarily affect the shareholders or the people on the board. It will filter down to the people who are in, in cybersecurity at the companies, whose jobs it was to protect the company from these hacks. They'll probably get fired. They will probably also end up reducing maybe their bill, their wage bill. They'll want to cut some costs because of this loss, and so you end up with people who are maybe out of work as a result of a hack like this, and there are unintended consequences that we don't necessarily know about, even though a small percentage has gone to charity. You could have various people whose lives have been made a misery by this, so we've got to, keep that in mind.
That's very true.
And point.
On that, like $20,000, apparently in 2019, this is according to Wired, ransomware attacks potentially grabbed at least $7.5 billion from victims in the US alone. And that ransomware attacks is basically how this organization, DarkSide hacking group, attacks its victims. So they infect, companies like IT, their IT infrastructure, and then will only give it back if they pay up, basically.
I've never told you guys, have I, that I experienced a ransomware when I was at university.
Did you?
Yeah, I was on the university computers in the big library, and it came.
And you don't work for a big corporation, Martin?
I do not.
Super rich,
certainly not. And this ransomware came up on the thing, you know. And of course, I heard of ransomware, so I was like, "This is rubbish." But luckily, I'd finished my dissertation. I was done. I was literally done with the computer when it came up, and so I just logged out, and I never went back into the library again because it was the end of term. So I was done. So it didn't affect me at all. But I saw, you know, I saw the message saying, "You have to pay." I can't remember what it was. It wasn't a crazy. It was only like, I think it was a couple hundred pounds. Others were released. This whatever, I mean, whatever, you know, whatever bullshit they spout as their custom email. So yeah, Interesting.
So they were like threatening to delete all your work or something.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So. I mean, yeah. If they'd caught you a few weeks earlier, I mean, if that had happened to me right before I handed in my dissertation, I think I would probably pay up or try to. I would not write my dissertation again.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting because that prompts a question you just inspired, and I'm sorry you endured that, Martin, but I'm glad you managed to escape. Which is, as you just acknowledged, Alex, ransomware is a big thing. I think these dark side hackers have apparently a particularly sophisticated form of ransomware that's slightly better than a lot of the others. Better at doing what it does. But there have been headlines, I think throughout this year, but just in general, headlines and news breaking about these big companies that do pay up these ransoms. And of course, on the one hand, there's this tradition, particularly in America, of, you know, the government will not negotiate with terrorists.
Yeah.
But you've got these companies, private companies, seemingly all the time, bowing to ransomware demands.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have my question to you is, do you think it is right for private companies to surrender to ransomware attacks, given that the data that's usually being ransomed is essential customer data or essential business data? Or do you think that they should not succumb and should, you know, refuse to negotiate with these people?
Oh, that's a good question, isn't it? Because, if it is a big company, then by not negotiating with them and not paying what is normally like just, you know, essentially a speeding ticket, it's something affordable because otherwise they wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't agree so easily, these companies. But if they don't agree, if they don't negotiate with the terrorists, then the terrorists shoot the hostages, you know, so to speak. They delete the information, and then that does what to the business? Puts it out of business. That could cause, you know, hundreds of people to lose their jobs, you know, unknowable misery to so many people, just because they didn't pay off some hackers. I can totally understand why they would rather just pay the ransomware. I guess I'm not saying that's right. I don't know what the right solution is.
That's the thing, when it becomes personal.
Better IT security.
When it comes personal to your business and you know the effects it will have, it's like saying, you know, we don't negotiate with terrorists, but then when it's the person's family, when it's your son or daughter or brother or sister who's the one who's been taken hostage, you're in a completely different situation, aren't you? So the government can mandate that people don't pay ransomwares, but when it comes down to the individual businesses, it's a totally different scenario, isn't it? Knowing that it will affect them so badly.
I mean, would you prefer, because sometimes the ransomware is not even we'll delete the data, it's like we'll publish the data or something like that.
I'm pretty sure mine was just a spam.
So if it's something that like that, where it's we'll publish all the personal data of your customers, which is obviously protected and illegal, and even if it weren't stringently protected by the law, it's not something that you would want to happen to you. Have all your personal information leaked to then be used by criminals in much more nefarious ways. I can understand why companies would want to pay a ransom in that situation, because they, as well, they don't want their stock to plummet because of the bad press that comes from a cyber attack. I have another question for you.
Okay.
Which is, setting aside everything we've just discussed, setting aside the TravelX thing, if you knew that somebody had taken $2.3 million from a company and handed it to charity, which company would you be okay with it being?
Off the top of my head, I'm thinking things like big, major gas and oil companies like Exxon or something, or Nestle's. Supposed to be a horrible company.
Nestle
aren't
is pretty bad, yeah.
Yeah. I know there are a lot of the ones who definitely don't pay tax as well. Your likes of your Starbuckses, your Apples,
your Amazons.
Multiple. We say multiple, but there's only one of each of these, aren't there? Although there's quite a few franchises of Starbucks, it's true. Yeah, those big greedy corporations, I guess. They're the ones that you want to you would want to, or at least not want to be ransomed.
But if one did have
least
to be ransomed.
Not want to be ransomed, yeah. If one had to be, yeah.
Yeah.
What about you? Yeah. Who's top of your list?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's one of those companies. I would feel less bothered by it if I knew it was a company that was somehow cheating the system. Like you say, the ones that are paying very, very low taxes or no taxes at all. The ones who are actively, even legally, but still actively avoiding paying their fair share.
So Donald Trump.
Yeah, maybe. Somebody like Apple, who I assume they dodge taxes as much as they can. But even if they didn't dodge taxes, there was it was only 3 or 4 years ago when they made $4.5 billion in profit, not revenue, profit. And it's stuff like that where I'm like, you could afford to lose some of that.
Yeah,
you know, companies like that where I'm like, I definitely know for a fact that you've got so much money saved up for a rainy day that you can afford a few million to be stolen and redistributed.
Yeah, and I think that's the ransom these people, they do, is they're thinking, okay, well, if the state isn't doing it, if the government isn't putting in the right provisions to have these people pay their fair share, then this is what we're going to do. It does seem that they're taking most of it for themselves, let's be honest.
Yes.
But this is like, where does this lead? Because ultimately, I don't know, these people seem to be, at the very least, this dark side group getting away with that. They choose targets. They make money from ransomware. So they invest more in their operations, and then they hit bigger targets because of that. And now they're getting to the point where they're hitting these big companies, these big corporations, and they're starting to try and get public opinion on their side by publicly saying they're donating to charities, even though that money can't be used by those charities now because they've publicly announced it.
Yeah.
So what's the end goal? Is it just to keep going, keep making bigger, more money, hitting bigger targets? How could you stop them?
I mean, that's it, isn't it? The biggest, I imagine law enforcement would tell you that the biggest battle they're facing in this era is hacking. It's just because law enforcement is always on the back foot, right? They've got to respond to hackers.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
They literally cannot invent hacking techniques before the hackers invent them in order to develop the responses to them. I'm sure they try, but they can't. Because there's that thing about hackers who get hired by law enforcement and good hackers or what's the word, I suppose converted hackers who may have been on the wrong side of the law at one point, but then help companies with their cybersecurity or help law enforcement find other hackers. But I feel like once you've flipped, you're behind the curve. You're no longer in the game. You're not at the hot seat. And hackers, it seems to me, he says, putting on his 60-year-old man's flat cap. You're like, meh. These hackers seem to be getting younger and younger. They just got these teenagers in front of their laptops in their parents' bedroom, hacking these banks.
Where's Robin gone? Where's Robin? Who's this on the podcast?
I feel like because hacking in particular seems to be a profession of the young. I know that there are older hackers, but it seems to be that the ones who are developing the cutting edge stuff are young hackers. Some of them are obscenely young, obscenely talented at hacking. I feel like that's something that you can't battle, right?
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
It is tough.
Yeah.
I think from the hackers' point of view, they've got to find a way that if they're going to give this money to charity, they don't announce it straight off the bat.
I mean, yeah, that was a blunder.
That would have been a bit of a learning curve. But what happens to this money? Does it get returned to some of the companies that have allegedly been hacked? Can they even? I mean, it's ransomware. So, the companies have paid it up, haven't they? So the money doesn't then go back to them.
It's interesting, yeah, because so the way that they donated the money to these charities are through this organization called the Giving Block, which accepts anonymous donations in the form of Bitcoin, which was how they were able to transfer this money to these charities. And some of these charities don't accept anonymous donations, but these two charities generally signed up for the Giving Block. Children International said that they won't accept the donation now that they know that it's fraudulent. But yeah, where does... I'm not sure where it goes. I guess to the authorities?
To the government in general.
To the, yeah, government. To the man.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it would be returned, because if it's a... I mean, the immediate thing, I would hope that it...
They wouldn't give it back to whoever donated it, surely.
Yeah, but it's automated, right? That, to a certain extent, like, that would just automatically go back to them. What then might happen is you've got a paper trail of sorts where the investigators can certainly identify who that donor was in Bitcoin to... What was it called? The Giving Block?
Yeah.
Maybe?
Yeah.
Unless the Giving Block... My assumption is the Giving Block would have to have an explicit policy that says if we suspect criminal activity, we withhold the funds.
Yeah.
So unless they have a policy like that, I imagine it would just go straight back to whoever donated it.
So replying to this story, the Giving Block actually said that they weren't aware these donations were made by cyber criminals. Obviously not. It's anonymous in Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. But they said, we're still working to determine if these funds were actually stolen. If it turns out these donations were made using stolen funds, we will begin the work of returning them to the rightful owner.
I mean, wouldn't it suck if you were just sat at home being like, I gave $10,000 to this company,
yeah,
and these assholes have said that they've hacked in and they were giving this money. I just wanted to be nice and give an anonymous donation.
I just wanted to do it anonymously, and it ends up going to you donate to the Children's Project, and it ends up going to Amazon or something.
To go into the federal tax, federal Fed's pocket,
directly into Jeff Bezos's pocket. You try and give to the poor. And
you're right. You'd have to just go back to the person who donated it, regardless, wouldn't it? Because if it is anonymous, then you wouldn't necessarily know that it's hacked. They're saying this, but you is their word against yours, isn't it?
Mm.
You wouldn't just be able to take the money. Yeah,
that's true. We were assuming, of course, that claim is true.
It's true. That's the other thing, right? Surely, wouldn't they give more?
Yeah,
if they were truly Robin Hood.
So, yeah, I guess maybe they were thinking that if we gave more, it would draw suspicion.
Mm, good point.
And so they were actually hoping to slip this under the radar, but it didn't happen.
Maybe it wasn't selfish. Maybe they weren't keeping the rest of that $2.3 million, because imagine, go back to medieval times and Robin Hood was hanging out in the forest and a noble person would ride through with their entourage and their chest full of gold. Robin Hood holds them up, takes the gold, and then he's like, so minus administration costs and hours worked by my employees, the merry men, of course they need their fair pay, that leaves out of this £100, that's £1 for charity. Take that to the village, Little John, and put it in the peasant lady's hands. And that's how it worked.
Associated costs.
See, we're not baddies.
Of 2.28 million.
So do you think it's the same with, the mafia and the mob and stuff, when they invest a lot in community projects because they want to get the community on their side? They want to appear like they're doing a lot of good. They fund, soup kitchens and that kind of thing to help the needy in society, but really that's made through money that's criminal in nature.
Well, yeah,
that kind of similar thing. They're just trying to get public perception on their side.
Yeah, so, it's the whole thing of vigilantes are only called vigilantes if people believe they are, otherwise they're called criminals, right? It's all about perception. Good point.
That's good.
Good point.
I mean, either way, what do you guys think at home? Do you think that these hackers, the dark side group, are really Robin Hood figures? Or are they just criminals looking to get some fame? Let us know in the comments down below. And also send us your thoughts on what other questions you'd like us to discuss. Any other particular topics you'd like us to look into? Get your suggestions in. But in the meantime, guys, do you fancy a quiz?
Sounds good to me.
Welcome, fellas, to this week's quiz. Martin, last time you faced Robin, it was a, dare I say, a bit of a bloodbath.
I've forgotten about that. I'd suppressed those memories.
Quite rightly.
I don't want to repeat, but I fear it could be the case. So we'll see. Well, positive thoughts.
Well, there isn't a movie round in this one like there was that time, but there is one movie question.
I mean, the appalling thing is that I'd already lost quite convincingly by the time the movie round came around. just added salt to the wounds. But anyway,
okay. You're having an off day. Today is your on day.
Oh, just calm it, Kermit.
All right.
There is a beer question in here as well, and I know you'll
Martin will get that.
Equals hands down.
Okay.
So show me your buzzers. What have you got? Robin, what have you gone for this week?
Mine's an old favourite.
Well, classic. Classic Wilhelm Scream.
Wilhelm Scream.
Okay, Martin, what have you gone for?
Well, I enjoyed this one so much last week that I thought I'd have it again.
Nothing. You lose. Good day, sir. It's all there, black and white, clear as crystal.
There we go.
You get nothing.
You get nothing.
That's brilliant.
You lose. Good day, sir.
as imagined by Gene Wilder, in the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory film, where he plays very aggressive, creepy Willy Wonka.
Willy Wonka in the Chocolate Factory.
I mean, he lives up to the name.
Yeah, yeah. Is it? What's the actual name of that film? Is it Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory? Isn't
it? Yeah,
it's Willy Wonka.
Yeah, that movie is called Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. I think because they cast Gene Wilder and he was a star, so like, we want to emphasize that it's about him and not about
Charlie. Fair enough. Don't blame them. Yeah, I'm very anti-Charlie from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. That's the stance I'm taking. Okay, on that note, question one.
Okay.
Former British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher has what middle name?
Well, this
Margaret something Thatcher. I mean, it could be anything. Let's just go for...
In the dark here.
Nothing!
Let's go for Elizabeth.
It is not Elizabeth, no.
Oh.
Damn.
I mean, now we've entered into the realm of women's names.
the thing is, of the right era. That's the thing.
Yeah,
well,
I suppose there's that. Yeah, and of the background. Let's see, what would a conservative greengrocer call their child? Margaret, not Elizabeth.
Sprout.
This is wrong. Eileen.
It is not Eileen. No. No. I was trying to think of a famous person with this name, but I actually can't think of a famous person with this name.
So if this, Karen.
No, I'll tell you what it starts with, or the first letter, and see if you can get it. Okay, so the first letter of it is H.
Nothing! You lose!
I heard Wilhelm.
Is it Harriet?
It is not Harriet.
It's not Harriet.
Not Harriet, no.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You lose!
Let's go for Henrietta.
It is not Henrietta either.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna have one more guess and then I'm gonna tell you.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'll get this one.
So I think it's like German or Germanic or something. I could be wrong, and that could be a total misstep on my part.
I'm trying to think.
Yeah, I've only got one thing in mind, but I don't think that's right because there are definitely famous people called this. But I could go for it anyway.
Wow. Go for it, dude.
Helena.
It's not Helena, no.
Because that's Greek, isn't it?
Is it
Helen of Troy?
I think. You say Germanic?
I don't know. I could be wrong, to be honest.
Is it something like Hilda?
Ooh, I like that.
Is it Hilda?
I'm vindicated by the clue. It is Hilda. Yes.
It's right.
Oh, well
done. It is right. Well done.
I thought you were going to say Hitler.
Is it Margaret Hitler Thatcher?
Something that was never publicised.
Margaret, kill them all, Hitler.
Thatcher, yes. Hilda.
Hilda,
it was actually
nice.
Hilda. Nice, good clue. Yeah. Good guess. I almost said I stretched it out because I was going to say Hildegard, and I thought, nah, that's not a real name. Let's just stop it. I mean, it is a real name, but you know, I almost said Hildegard.
Hilda.
So, thank you.
Stopped at the right point.
No, that sounds Germanic to me. That sounds Germanic.
Am I right in that? I don't know.
No, you're right. No, that's a Germanic name. Yeah.
Okay. Good.
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's 1-0 to Robin. Question number 2. Cross, tail, and head are all types of which weather condition?
Oh, yeah. Nothing. You lose.
The wind.
Martin. It is the wind. Well done. Yes.
That was so much easier than Hilda.
that was a tough opening question.
1-0.
1-0. Yeah.
But also, Martin, your buzzer speed—you were right on it there. You were.
It actually had a second. Thank you. There was a second of it spinning around a little bit too. So.
Oh, there you go.
I was worried for a split second.
Well, I think I put some quite difficult questions in this quiz looking at it, so I had to sprinkle in some that I knew we were going to get.
Thank you for the warning.
I wasn't expecting Hilda, in fairness, so good job.
Oh, great. Thanks for that, Alex.
Well, okay, it was the third guess, and to be honest, Robin, you said the answer like, Hilda!
Oh, no. I mean, it was a total guess on my part, but I'm glad that you included the question you didn't expect us to get. That's what I'm saying. Thank you for
it. Oh, okay. Okay. Question number 3. Let's move on. Okay. I'm definitely going to mispronounce this, but cervello is Italian for which part of the body? I don't know if that's a hard C. It's, or maybe cervello.
How's that spelled?
C-E-R-V-E-L-L-O. Cervello.
Cervello.
Is Italian cabello, for cabello. Which part of the body?
Oh, Italian. Oh, sorry, in Spanish. Cervello.
Cervello. Martin. Is it? Oh, sorry, Robin.
Thank you very much. Cervix?
It is not the cervix, no.
Damn it.
Alex wouldn't say that, would he? Cervello.
But it's got the same first four letters.
You lose! Good day, sir!
Italian. I never did any in Italian, but I'm going to go for... Cervello. It sounds like a singular, doesn't it? That's the thing. Cervello. So you don't have your cervellos. You're one. So I'm gonna say nose.
It's not in the nose. No.
Damn.
Do you want a clue?
Yes, please.
During a prominent period in Italian history, I imagine quite a few people had quite big ones of these.
Nothing.
Oh.
Martin.
What? He said nose, didn't he?
Yeah.
You said that was your guess. So it's not the nose.
It's not the nose, no. Did you say, or did you guess nose again?
No, I didn't know.
No, I interrupted him before his guess. Sorry.
Because that clue, I was expecting it to not end like that.
Oh. It's pretty obscure. It's a pretty obscure one.
Okay.
Wait, during a part of Italian history...
During a pretty prominent part of Italian history, there were quite a few people, I expect, who had big ones of these.
Robin. So, assuming you don't just mean dicks, I'm going to go with arrogant Romans. Is it the head?
It is not the head.
Oh, nice. I like the logic there, though.
Thank you.
For a certain part of history, I'm trying to think of the different parts of Italian history, and I think about the Romans.
I mean, after the Romans, it's just a mess, really.
Just general Italy.
Just Italy until... Or not Italy, all the principalities and the...
Have you both had a guess each, or shall I give you another clue?
Yeah, we could have a clue, can't we? Oh, one sec, got my buzzer ready. Okay.
Oh, this may be fingers on buzzer then, because...
Okay.
Robin, you are very close, but I couldn't accept head.
What was that?
Oh, you didn't hear the clue. Say the clue again.
You're very close, but...
I said, Robin's very close, but I couldn't accept the head.
Okay.
Robin, yeah.
Is it the brain?
It is the brain, yeah. And I was actually thinking about Renaissance and the Enlightenment and, you know,
sure,
Leonardo da Vinci, big head. brain, rather.
True, big brain. And probably a big head. He probably wasn't a modest man. Yes. Good one.
Very good. Very good.
There you go. Cervello. Cervello. Who knows? Let us know how it's pronounced in the comments down below.
There's got to be someone who's fluent
in
Italian.
That would be Cervello or something, wouldn't it?
Okay. So that's 2-1 to Robin.
Okay.
Question number 4. Selismophobia is the fear of doing what? It's got a silent P. I'm assuming it's a silent P on the start of it. Otherwise, I don't know how this word's pronounced. Selismophobia.
Selismophobia.
It's the fear of doing what?
Sounds like a bad pun. Selismophobia. Come on.
Selis. So P-S-E-W... Sorry, double L.
Double L, I-S. Mo-phobia.
Ugh. Selis with a P... Oh, my goodness. Selis. Alex.
Fear of doing what?
What did you do when you put this quiz together? This is tough.
Selismophobia. Fear of doing something. Okay, fear of doing something.
Maybe you just need a big Cervello, Robin.
Fear of...
How are you figuring this out, Martin? I'm really confused by this word. Selismophobia.
The word... I'm trying to think about too much.
Okay.
I'm trying to think about what words could be associated... Well, I guess kind of with that word. Of doing words. That would come up.
Let me know if you want a clue.
I'm definitely up for a clue.
We might need one.
Okay, there's maybe fingers on buzzers then in that case.
Oh, okay.
In this case. Get your buzzers ready. And okay. I'll say it very clearly.
Okay.
Okay. Selismophobia is the fear of doing what?
You lose! Good day, sir!
Martin.
So you get...
stuttering.
It is stuttering, yes.
Yeah.
Selismophobia.
That's one of those deliberately ironic words, isn't
it? Yeah.
I guess so, yeah. That would be a very difficult word to say.
Let's come up with a word that they can't say.
Yeah.
It's all there,
black and white. Yeah.
Gene Wilder is just there going off script now. He's invading the podcast. Okay.
Okay.
So that is 2-2, I believe.
On
to question 5.
This is tight.
I'm sorry, Martin. So this question is Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? A to D, put them in order. Question.
What? Okay. Okay. I could get it right.
Okay.
Okay.
So, I'll list them A to D. So you can give me them. You can give me the names of them, or you can give me the letters A to D. Whatever you want.
Okay.
Put these Tom Hanks films in chronological order.
Okay.
Catch Me If You Can, Forrest Gump, The Terminal, and Bridge of Spies.
You lose. Good day, sir.
Martin.
Forrest Gump.
Okay.
So that's A. Then it's Catch Me If You Can, then The Terminal, then Bridge of Spies.
He did it.
Oh my god, you did it.
Nice. Yeah. Well done. There you go.
3-2 to Martin.
Oh no. And now there's a beer question coming up. So
yeah, for those of you who don't know Forrest Gump, 1994. Actually, do you know what? I'm gonna let Robin do the rest.
Yeah. Okay, 1994.
Catch Me If You Can.
2.
Yeah.
I believe The Terminal was 2006.
You're wrong.
I thought it was a tiny bit earlier.
Okay.
2004?
Oh my god, Martin. Yes.
He's got it. There you go. And then
Bridge of Spies, which I've never actually heard of.
That's a tricky one. Because I forget what year it is now.
Like 2014, something like that?
15? Yeah, I think 2015 maybe.
2015 is right.
Yeah.
Correct. There you go.
Would it help? Yeah.
Okay. So 3-2 to Martin. Question number 6.
Okay.
Where in the world would you expect to find a car with the vehicle registration code V?
Nothing!
V.
Yes.
Yep. I was going to go Marta. For Venice.
It is not Venice, no.
Oh.
I thought they might have something different to Italy.
This is wrong, but Vietnam?
It is not Vietnam, no.
Yeah.
Mm. Just V. Mm.
Okay. All the cars have one letter on their number plate. That's it. You
lose! Yes, Martin.
Venezuela.
It is not Venezuela, no.
Dang.
We're just listing the countries now.
Yeah, what other countries begin with V?
That's the thing, isn't it? That's the thing.
Is this a trick question, Alex?
Maybe. We'll see.
Actually,
we'll see.
That's not a clue. Nothing about that was a clue, by the way. Ignore that.
I missed it anyway.
Okay, good.
The Vatican. Sorry.
I didn't hear a buzzer, Robin.
Buzzer just went.
And what is your guess?
Is it the Vatican?
That is incorrect.
Damn
that's
it.
That's why I
no,
said
it. No, it's Vatican City. So.
Oh, it is.
What was my first answer?
Venice.
Oh, my goodness.
You said Venice?
Yeah.
No, I said Venice, but I didn't mean Venice. I meant Vatican.
Oh, did you mean Vatican?
Because I literally said I thought they'd have something different to the rest of Italy.
Well, that's
I thought it was an odd thing that you went for Venice, but that makes
I didn't mean Venice. Right. It's almost midnight. I didn't, but anyway, yeah.
It is almost Oops. Midnight. The time recording.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost Martin's birthday, everyone.
That was silly.
Happy birthday, Martin.
Happy birthday, Martin.
Well, thank you.
Okay. So three all. My advice would be to pay close attention to the words we're saying. sorry. Okay.
Oh dear.
Question number 7.
Okay.
What is the national currency of Trinidad and Tobago?
Don't know. No idea. Guess I go.
I think I heard the scream first. Wilhelm's scream.
This is literally a shot in the dark. Is it the British pound?
It is not the British pound.
Well, there you go.
Trinidad and Tobago. Is it the dollar?
I'll accept that. It is the dollar, yes. I found this this question funny, though, because it's the national currency is the Trinidad and Tobago dollar.
Was that your
next guess?
No, that was my first guess, and I thought, nah, it can't be that. So
it's a bit of a trick question, really.
Yeah, a lot of places do have dollars or pounds, really, aren't they? They're the two.
Yeah.
I would guess more places have dollars than pounds, but I could be wrong.
What I was trying to think was what currency do a lot of the old French colonies have?
The euro, yeah, it's a good question, isn't it? Yeah,
do they? Because of course, when France moved to the euro, do they stick with francs then? Or
they probably must have switched away from the franc because it would have been tied to the French currency. Gold. Yeah. I imagine. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Interesting. Who knows? I don't know. Yeah, yeah, let us know in the comments below.
Tell us in the comments. Yeah.
So I believe that's 4-3 to Martin now.
No,
it's a close game.
He's got it. Okay. Still this beer question. I'm living in dread of this beer question.
I wouldn't be too worried about the beer question. Beer's a hugely wide topic.
And it's so not is Tom like, Hanks.
And I do not like
some, it's not like some obscure beer question either, to be honest. Okay, question
what
number
is
eight.
Beer?
What is the meaning of beer?
Question number 8. Who is attributed with the famous quote, "Be the change that you wish to see in the world"? The French. Yes, Robin.
Is that misattributed to Gandhi? Mahatma.
It is attributed to Gandhi, yes. Is it not actually him? Did you say it's misattributed?
I believe it's a misattribution, but I could be wrong. If you know, please let us know in the comments below.
Every question.
No, hang on. No, I feel personally attacked. Let's find this out.
Sorry, Alex.
No, it's okay.
Offending the quizmaster, never a good idea.
Be the change you want to see in the world. Gandhi didn't say, "Be the change you want to see in the world." Here's the real quote. Oh, I'm excited.
Okay.
Don't be the change you want to see in the world.
It's just piss off.
He just said, nuke everyone else. okay, so would you like to hear the real quote?
Yes, please.
He said, We but mirror the world. All the tendencies present in the outer world are to be found in the world of our body. If we could change ourselves, the tendencies in the world would also change. As a man changes his own nature, so does the attitude of the world change towards him. This is the divine mystery supreme. A wonderful thing it is, and the source of our happiness. We need not wait to see what others do.
Oh God. Goes on, doesn't he? I mean, he stretched that out to much longer than it should have been.
I think the shortened down version was better.
I mean, I get it, Gabby. You've got crowds. You've got people watching you and following you who want to hear you speak for a while. If you just said, oh, be the change you want to see in the world, you'd be done with it in 2 minutes. That'd be the end of your speech. So, you know, fair play. Get the crowds in.
Exactly. Okay, well, fair play, Robin. Good job. That's 4-all as we go on to question 9. This is
blimey.
It's going to make no sense. This is going to be a question.
Which is this one, Robin?
No.
I think you should get it though.
No, don't do this.
Let me ask it. Question 9. Which beer markets itself as the king of beers?
You lose. Good day, sir.
I think I heard Robin there first.
What?
I think I did. What? I'm sorry, Martin.
Confession time. I did an Alex, and I pressed the buzzer just as he finished the question.
Oh my God! And he's buying time now. I've seen this.
I hadn't really absorbed the question, but I think my mind is still leaning towards something like this is where it goes really wrong. Konigsberg.
That is incorrect, I'm afraid.
No, it's a false statement made by Budweiser.
It is Budweiser, yes.
It's actually Budweiser. Yes.
It is, yeah. They've got a crown on their logo.
They're not even beer.
Yeah.
They are lager beer. Are you trying to say they're piss?
No, it's just not a very good lager.
Interpretation. Just not a beer.
Okay.
Well done, Martin. Your victory was well earned.
It's not over yet. No, it's question nine.
I feel like it is. I tried the Alex tactic, buzzing in first, stalling for time. And
it's definitely not. You can come back from this. It's 5-4 as we go into question 10. Okay. Last question.
Okay.
Which word can come after dream, steam, and life to form other words?
Got it.
Buzz me.
You lose!
Boat.
It is boat, yes.
Good
job. Dreamboat, steamboat, and lifeboat.
I was thinking train. So I was
kind of... Yeah, that's what I thought. I was thinking steam engine. Train. I was like, dream engine. Not quite. I
mean, it's life engine. Yeah. I was like, steam train is a thing, but that's two words. And I've never heard of a life train. What? Oh, there you go. Well done, Martin. Well done.
Thank you.
Congratulations, Martin. Well earned victory there.
Thank you very much.
Would you both like the bonus question?
Yes, please.
Yeah, sounds good.
So this is probably a bit of a tough one for midnight. but it involves some maths. But thankfully, I will accept a closest wins answer.
Okay.
How many hours are there in a leap year? Closest
oh
wins.
Oh my God.
Oh my word.
How many hours are there in a leap year?
Okay, it's 24 hours in a day. There's 366 days in a leap year. 24.
You've got the question. Yeah.
24 times 366
That's it, isn't it?
You know what it is, Alex? Rarely, in most cases in maths, you get a number when you do that sum. But in this case, you get a letter or two letters. F-U. That's what you get.
I said I'd accept closest wins. Just a rough.
I didn't even. My brain can't even do closest wins right now. Oh dear. Wait a minute.
Do you want to go? Okay.
Thank you, Martin. Wait a second. What did I say? 24 times 366. Is it? 8,784? Martin, your guess.
I'm sorry, Martin, you don't need to guess.
No, it's right, isn't it?
Spot on, yeah.
Well done. What, really?
8,784. You nailed it.
Very good.
Yes. Bloody crushed it. Very I mean, I feel like even though you lost the quiz, Robin, you regained some kind of...
That was very good.
Some kind of moral victory there. That was great. Yeah.
Oh, good, all those years of being beaten with a cane to memorize the multiplication table. They paid off.
Yeah.
Very good.
I mean, in fairness, Robin did like a calculator in his head and he was just trying to stretch that out.
Yeah, just press the button.
Is it 8,000?
I've got to learn to stop
doing
this.
In a split second. You had the answer in a split second, but
just
still.
Opening myself to this kind of thing. well done, Martin. You deserve that victory. It was well done. And I think that puts us all on 50%.
Does it really? Wow.
I don't think I'm 50%. I think I'm losing now.
I don't know. I think you are, Alex. I think we're all on 50-50, which is pretty tight.
That's
going
quite
into
amazing
the final
considering
quizzes.
Where we're at. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Nice one.
I'm assured that an independent adjudicator will check the results there.
Yes.
They should be on screen now anyway, shouldn't they?
They
yeah,
should
I'm
be.
Probably wrong here.
If I've done my job right, they should be on screen right now. Well, thank you both of you for taking part in my quiz. Congratulations again, Martin, and congratulations, Robin, on that quick maths.
Thank you, but congratulations to Martin for winning. That's what counts.
Thank you.
All right. I was just trying to give you
but,
something there.
But thank you for some of the good clues as well. So those clues were pretty good.
There were some good ones. I thought getting Hilda was a good one too.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That was a good one. Well devised there, Robin.
In summary, I think we're all winners from that quiz. I hope that the biggest winners out of all of us are the listeners. Thank you so much for your support and for sticking around. And we hope that you enjoyed the quiz as well and enjoyed the topics that we discussed this week.
Mm-hmm.
Don't forget as well, if you want a 68% off a 2-year plan with NordVPN and you want to support the podcast, head over to nordvpn.com/justinteresting to learn some more information about that. But in the meantime, guys, thanks for joining me and have a nice week, and we'll see you next time.
See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.